Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So this evening is the Saturday night. Last night was the observance night. Double header. So the sort of back-to-back Dhamma talks. Last night, listening to Ajahn Amaro's talk, stirred up memories, associations, somehow that's the way the mind works, of an old song. Of course, you have to be ancient, over 50, to remember it. Pink Floyd. It was ticking away the moments that make up a dull day. You fritter and waste the hours in an offhand way. There's a time. But the just thinking of that how we do find ways to even when we're in retreat and the mind has difficulty settling sometimes. Sometimes, you go through periods where it's you're really sort of in a groove of practicing and it's going well, and then sometimes there's distractions or it's difficult. And it's important to attend to both these aspects. And it's one of the benefits of a long period of retreat, 3 month winter retreat like this. You have the opportunity to work with and experience the different ways that the mind reacts, or the rhythms and the cycles that it goes through. But one of the qualities that, and also thinking, reflecting on the, one of the qualities that are really important to be attending to, for the mind to be able to settle, is a quality of contentment. And there's different ways that we relate to contentment, and both on an external level and on an internal level. So that I think that's an important theme to be exploring in practice, as well as in our day-to-day life. There's a great story of Ajahn Sumedho when he was early days of being at at Wat Bapong, and he was the first Westerner who came to live with Ajahn Chah, and the Thai people there in Ubon were, both impressed, inspired, and worried about him, and particularly about food, what he would be, how he'd be making out with food there. And Wat Bapong had a reputation and had for a long, long time of having the worst food of many forest monasteries in Thailand. And there was also American Air Force Base there, fighter bomber base, so that there were restaurants had sprung up and whatnot to cater to the Air Force personnel, GIs there, and so people started showing up with sort of American cuisine, sort of hamburgers and hot dogs. And worried for Ajahn Sumedho that he wouldn't be able to deal with the Thai food. And Ajahn Chah watched that for a little bit, and then finally he asked people to stop bringing special food for Ajahn Sumedho. He said, if you keep bringing him food like that, he'll just become stupid. He said, he'll become really smart when he's able to just be happy with the food that he's got here, whatever food he gets, whatever food comes. So that sense of contentment on both an external level of whatever you get and an internal level of being happy with whatever you do, experience. So those are qualities that, in terms of meditation, we need to be attending to, as well as our of course, just a sense of well-being in our day-to-day life. How do we get along with the world around us? So that living in society, living in community, those are that quality of contentment is really extraordinarily important. The ability to not be either a burden on others or a source of irritation and frustration for others, is contentment is an important part of learning how to live comfortably. Day-to-day life, ordinary circumstances, and being content. There's a wonderful little story, I think it's in the Vinaya, of the Buddha A monk comes and there's a little vignette. Monk comes and he's in a monastery that he's having a difficult time to meditate in because there's all these birds. They keep making a racket. And there's just I'd like to meditate, I'd like to get his practice going well, but these birds are just a constant source of irritation. And they're in the trees and they're flying around, they're talking back and forth, they're singing, they're clucking, they're whatever. And the Buddha's advice was, well, if you want to deal with these birds, if you want to get rid of them, drive them away, all you need to do is just, you know, once they come close to you, come fly close to you, then just ask for a feather from them. And then, you know, there's bird comes close. Oh, please give me a feather. Glad to see you. Can I have one of your feathers? And pretty soon the bird's cleared out of there. It's that sense of when somebody is asking from others or making demands on others, even if it's done in a polite way, just that making demands on others or not being content, asking for things. People drift away very quickly. So that that quality of contentment is very. It's an important part of living together in a way that is, you know, harmonious or is comfortable. There's a contemporary sort of similar situation. There was actually a recent issue of the New Yorker. There was, of course, they usually have some good cartoons, and there's a guy sitting in a bar on his own, talking to the bartender. He says, I lost all my Facebook friends after I asked them to lend me some money. That's what happens. Asking for things, or angling for things, trying to get things. So that they particularly as monastics, but it applies to the world as that cartoon illustrates, is that not asking for things, not trying to get things, not trying to get special circumstances around you, special things for you, things that have to make, things that you think you absolutely need in order for yourself to be comfortable. You're like, no, you're much more happy when there's contentment. And people around you are much happier as well. So that as an individual quality as well as a social and communal quality, you know, contentment lays a very strong basis. So that that developing of a quality of contentment. Of course, it's one of the things that the Buddha included in the Mangala Sutta, the things which were blessings. So contentment being one of the blessings that the Buddha outlined as a highest blessing. So both bringing blessings to oneself as well as to the world around one. The internally, investigating the quality of contentment as well, in the sense of, how do we deal with situations, situations that we like, that bring up desire, grasping, clinging, fascination, excitement, stimulation. Can we just be content with the ordinary, the simple, the things that are lead to peace? Can we be content with the natural rhythms of a day? Content with the internal practice of cultivating mindfulness, cultivating reflection and investigation. These are and if we're not content, then why not? What's the draw? What's the pull? So it's an important aspect of the mind to be investigating, because in terms of meditation, in order for the mind to really settle, we have to be content with the meditation object. We have to be content with the breath, with the metta bhavana, with the reflections on the body, with the reflections on sound of silence, whatever the meditation object is. There needs to be a quality of contentment with it in order for the mind to really settle, to unify. So it's an important aspect to be reflecting and investigating. And that's why also in terms of internal and external, these tend to mirror each other. If we have a willingness to be content with the circumstances around us, then that will tend to set the tone in the mind to be much more able to be content with the meditation, with the bhavana, with the kind of development, mental development aspects of cultivation. And of course the opposite is true as well. As we pay attention to contentment internally, then it gives us the tools to deal with the external world in a much more gracious way, a much more light way, that we're really able to live lightly, harmonizing with the circumstances around us, with the people that we're with. There's sort of sources of why is it that we get irritated, frustrated, averse to situations, averse to people? What is it that triggers it off? Why can't we be content with the circumstances, or the people, or people's idiosyncrasies. You know, what is the, you know, what triggers off that inability to just to be content with, you know, why do we have to make a fuss over something? Why do you have to get irritated? Why do we have to object to something? Why do we have to even have an opinion about it? Where's the contentment there? So that external, internal aspects of contentment, they're not separate. So we need to, you know, to be attending to that, watching, investigating, recognizing how we're getting trapped by our own sense of irritation, frustration with things, because it's not going my way, maybe. It's not going the way that I want it. We find it offensive in some way. Where's that coming from? And how can we return to a place of contentment? That's an investigation to be experimenting with and focusing on. Because that's going to bring excellent results in the internal practice of meditation. One of the, as we cultivate and attend to contentment, what do we? What are we doing it for? What comes to mind is the, after sort of putting a plug in for contentment, what comes to mind is one of the qualities that the Buddha said were crucial for his awakening. Non-contentment with states of that he had accomplished. So that there's sort of a paradox there, where there's contentment is really essential in terms of cultivation. But then we also need to be using that contentment to be furthering our investigation, our development, our exploration of what is it that's really going to lead to awakening? What is it that's going to really free the heart? And in that sense, then we have to take it further and investigate what needs to be cultivated, because the what needs to be refined. I think a good theme for attending to. Particularly in the meditation, is the five hindrances. If one is content, but any of the five hindrances are still there, then one needs to put some further effort in. One needs to be more willing to dig that up, clarify that, purify that. The Buddha gave an image of of comparing the mind to gold, and that then when gold has five impurities, then it's not malleable, it's unwieldy, it's brittle, it's not ready to be, not able to be worked into jewelry. Was it iron, copper, lead, tin and silver. And so whenever any of those metals are mixed with gold, then the gold is not going to be, it's not going to be as lustrous, it's not going to be as able to be worked. So, but when the gold has been refined and processed, and all of that has been taken out, then that gold is in truly malleable. It's lustrous. It's ready to be worked. It's ready to be made into beautiful jewelry. Then he said, in the same way, the hindrances, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, skeptical doubt, those five qualities, when those are still present in the mind, then that mind is not malleable, it's not lustrous, it's not ready to be worked, it's not ready to be to settle into either concentration or insight, and so that those qualities need to be worked with, so that contentment lays a foundation to see more clearly how those hindrances are affecting the mind, how they're obstructing the well-being of the mind, that sense of settledness of the mind, so that by attending to a fairly straightforward quality like contentment, then you can start to recognize, well, what is it that obstructs that contentment? What is it that, why can't I just be satisfied or happy, content with this present moment? You say, there's this quality of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, skeptical doubt, one or the other, or various combinations of them. So that then one, that gives a handle to be working on the mind. So the contentment is in a doorway into the meditation. It's a doorway into getting a handle on. Because if it's just a theoretical, you start a meditation and say, oh, I've got to free the mind from these hindrances, then it might not be so apparent how they're working. But when you set up a quality, or you recognize, what's the tone of the mind that is content, and what's the tone of the mind that is discontent, and then what is it that that obstructs that? And then what is it that one can bring in to, you know, allow that tone or the sort of the resonating of the mind in a way that is as contented, as peaceful, as settled, is clear, is able to really relinquish self-concern, relinquish the sort of draw to worldly tendencies, draw to the to that phrase that Ajahn Amaro has been used both in the readings as well as last night, sort of complicating the uncomplicated. I mean, there's discontent complicating the uncomplicated. Recognizing it, looking at it, paying attention to it, and then getting a feel for it. And then, well, what is it that allows the mind to settle? So that in that sense of both the encouragement to contentment, as well as, let's say, the Buddha's that paradox of not being contented with the states of ordinary states of well-being. There's also, I think, of the in the Satipatthana Sutta, the section on the Cittanupassana, the contemplation of the mind, in knowing the, say, surpassed mind as a surpassed mind, knowing surpassable mind as a surpassable mind, knowing the unsurpassable mind as the unsurpassable mind. So that recognizing that okay, yeah, this is okay, but yeah, it's not going to be around for that long. This is pretty shaky still. I'd better look for what is more unsurpassable, what is more in line with, say, true awakening, true freedom. So those are investigations, and I think it's really, particularly being in retreat and having the time to explore those themes, that's a real blessing for us. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.